8. The great battle of the mass driver swung slowly through space until it was brought to a halt by the free flyers. Tiny pulses of micro-thrust finessed the aim. Denise Nadis sat wearing a headset and wraparound mic combo, dreadlocks tied back, tapping a shiny purple fingernail against the mic as she talked to the AI of the newly deployed driver. "We're okay?" Bella asked. "She's all yours." Bella opened a channel to the Shenzhou 5 using the reply protocols that the Chinese had already specified. "This is Captain Bella Lind," she said. "I am commander of the UEE exploration vehicle Rockhopper. 30 minutes ago, our sensors detected the Shenzhou 5's penetration into our exclusion volume. We are entitled, even obliged, to take defensive action against any possible threat." Bella halted and made a conscious effort to sound reasonable and conciliatory. "We have the means to defend ourselves. We have deployed a steerable mass driver loaded with a free-flyer robot equipped with a nuclear demolition device, the kind we use for comet reshaping. I can put that nuke close enough to hurt you. It may fry your electronics or stress your shielding. I am hoping I will not have to do that, and that this message will be enough of a warning for you to apply reverse thrust and start exiting my airspace. If you do not, I will put that shot across your bows. If that does not deter you, there will be no second warning. I will just keep loading up the mass drivers until you get the message. The closer you get, the better my aim. I am asking you to turn around now. I will give you 5 minutes to signal your intentions by altering your thrust and vector." The message had been transmitted in real time. Even allowing for translating software delays, Wang Zhanmin should already have received her first communication. There would be no time for him to consult with Beijing for clarification on the best course of action, but Bella doubted that Wang would need such assistance. The appended video file, showing the deployment of the mass driver, should have been all the encouragement he needed. Everyone in space knew what a mass driver could do if you pointed it the wrong way. But 5 minutes went by and there was no detectable change in the thrust signature or transponder Doppler of the Chinese ship. Bella gave Wang Zhanmin 2 extra minutes of grace, then ordered the driver to deliver its payload. Telephoto cameras tracked the foreshortened gun barrel shape of the driver. The iron cage that would normally have accelerated a lump of cometary material flicked to one end of the driver's long launch track in less than 0.2 of a second, faster than the eye could follow. Recoil shoved the driver in the opposite direction. By the time the payload emerged, it had gained 14 kilometers per second of motion away from Rockhopper. Nadis confirmed that the robot and its nuclear cargo had survived the launch. They were hardened, like artillery shells. It would take 5 hours to cross space to the Shenzhou 5, but the robot's own thrusters would be able to make small course adjustments if the Chinese ship deviated from its predicted flight path. Bella didn't expect much of that. What she knew of the Chinese indicated that if Wang Zhanmin had not backed down by now, he never would. She called Nadis. "Status on the driver, Denise?" "Bruised and battered, but she can probably take another pulse." "Good. Load another robot into the can. I think Wang's going to need more than one bloodied nose before he sees sense." Bella took no satisfaction in being right. She would have liked nothing better than for the Shenzhou 5 to turn away with its tail between its legs. But for the next 6 hours, the ship remained perfectly on course, its fusion burn clean and even. During the final phase of the intercept, the free flyer steered itself to within 100 kilometers of the Chinese ship, close enough to make a point, but not, Bella devoutly hoped, to do more than bruise it. Slamming past, the FAD opened like a flower. The prick of hot blue light was visible across 300,000 kilometers, an evil little guest star that had no business in the sky. Then the nuclear flash died away, and the transponder signal from the Shenzhou 5 was still there, ticking like a pulsar. "The bastard didn't even blink," Schrope said. They sat in her office and digested the news. "He's brave, Craig. Anyone who comes this far out has my respect, no matter what flag they hang on their wall." "All the same, you made him a promise. I've reprogrammed the second free flyer for a closer intercept. 100 clicks doesn't seem to have done the trick. How does 50 sound? Be careful, she said. We want to scare them off, that's all. 50 is still plenty of room. Wang, the man, is probably bored out of his mind. Let's give him something to write home about. Bella waited another 5 minutes to see if the detonation had resulted in any belated change in the Shenzhou 5's trajectory, but there was no alteration. It was as if their warning shot hadn't even registered. Part of her wanted to send another warning message. She couldn't help but see the amiable face of the young Chinese commander whenever she closed her eyes, but she had warned him that there would be no second chance. She told Nadis to fire another shot. Kill margin set to 50, Nadis told her as the robot sped away. It isn't supposed to kill, Bella said fiercely. It's just persuasion. Don't anyone forget that. Bella was off duty. She knew she ought to be using the hours to catch up on sleep, but the idea seemed ludicrous. She worked on her static bicycle until she hit exhaustion like an iron wall, and then she worked through the exhaustion into the clean, clear limbo beyond it. She was trying not to think about Svetlana, because that only made things worse. But even with the Chinese matter demanding her full attention, her thoughts kept wandering back to what she had done to Sveta, her best friend. With Ryan Axford's agreement, Bella had arranged for her to be detained in a separate annex of the medical center, in the room that was normally reserved for contagious cases. Axford had told his staff that Svetlana needed to be readmitted following complications, unspecified complications, after the mass driver accident. Just a small white lie, and maybe not a lie at all, Bella thought. She was half convinced that the incident had sent her friend over the edge. It was a way of saving both their faces. There was to be no mention of differences of opinion between Bella and her senior systems engineer. No one would have to know that Svetlana had been relieved of duty until Rockhopper was back home, at which point the matter could be handled with suitable discretion. Bella could see how Svetlana, how both of them, felt wounded and wronged, but acknowledging that fact put neither of them closer to reconciliation. Right now, she didn't want it either. Svetlana had put her in an intolerably difficult position, and Bella had tried to handle the issue with tact, despite the appalling pressure she had been under. But Svetlana hadn't been able to see that. All she had seen was her own damaged pride. How dare Bella not take her warning seriously? She should have known that some part of Bella desperately wanted to listen to her friend. If Svetlana had left it at that, if she'd been content to let Bella know how let down and undervalued she felt, then there might still have been some prospect for mending the damage. But Svetlana hadn't been able to stop there. The moment she mentioned Kagan, Bella knew that Sveta truly hated her. It was astonishing how quickly friendship could turn to enmity, she thought, like a compass needle swinging from one pole to the other. They'd been excellent friends. They'd make excellent enemies as well. When she finished cycling, the sweat was stinging her eyes and her legs felt as if the bone, marrow and muscle had been flensed out and replaced by fine, sharp slivers of shattered glass. She drank a liter of water, fed the fish, and checked the acidity in the tank. Attracted by her presence, a group of blood fins nosed through the upper layers. The translucence of the blood fins always startled her. She could see their spines, brush thin, as if drawn in with lines of pale Indian ink. One was always bolder than the rest. Time after time it astounded her that something so simple, so toy-like, could be alive and have the faintest glimmering of personality. She considered fixing herself a meal. It was at least a day since she had eaten anything. But even if the exercise hadn't killed her appetite, which it nearly always did, she didn't think she would be able to keep anything down. Instead, she flicked through the uplinked news feeds, dismayed at how little airtime Rockhopper, and Janus for that matter, now merited. The heavyweight channels carried some discussion about the prickly standoff between the Chinese and the UEE, but it was buried a long way below the main items. A plane carrying a young athletic troop had crashed near the summit of Tirichmir in the Hindu Kush. Planes didn't crash very often, and when they did, they tended to make the news. The weather had cleared sufficiently for orbital and dirigible cams to obtain close-up imagery of the survivors, infrared blobs huddled around the broken crucifix of the wreck. Biometric recognition software dropped names onto the anonymous group, with ticker-taping text along the bottom of the feed giving biographical data. Helicopters couldn't get to them, and although teleoperated robots of the Pakistani emergency services were trying to get through to them, it was a race against hypothermia, fluid loss, and hypoxia. Bella stared at the satellite imagery of the crash survivors with a vague resentment. Three of them had died since the last update, a teacher and two children. She watched the rest of them stomp around in the snow, trying to keep warm. Her flexi chimed, filling with Craig Schrope's face. "Bella," she said redundantly. "I have some news," Schrope said. He glanced away from the camera, as if concerned that she might see something in his face. "It's the kind you might want to be sitting down for. We put another one across their bows." "That was the idea," she said. "Did it have any effect?"
"It did."
There was a certain tone to his voice. "Craig, what are you telling me?"
"We got too close," Schrope said.
"Too close?"
"We took them out."
He told her that the Shenzhou 5 had fallen silent. There was neither transponder signal nor thrust signature. Confirmation that the ship had been destroyed would have to wait, but Bella knew that was merely a formality. "We were supposed to be practicing deterrence," she said, forcing an icy calm into her voice. "Please tell me what went wrong." "The kill margin was still dialed down to 50, Schrope said placidly. "It shouldn't have hurt them." "Newsflash, Craig, we blew them out of the goddamn sky. I think that probably counts as hurting them."
"I'm aware of that," he said.
"You want to take a stab at explaining how that came to happen?"
"They must have changed course. We were using a predictive model most of the way. If they deviated from that..."
Schrope shrugged, as if nothing else needed to be said. "That was their problem. Law was on our side." "Is that going to help you sleep tonight, knowing that some legal specialist in Niagara Falls says you were in the right?"
"Frankly, yes."
All the rage bottled up since her encounter with Svetlana spilled over like a flood tide.
"You're a reptile, Craig. I've even bred cyclids with more humanity."
She slammed the flexi shut before she said worse. Bella stepped into the green calm of the medical complex, grateful to find Jim awake, propped up in bed with a flexi spread across his lap. He peered at her over his half-moon reading glasses.
"If this is an attempt to cheer me up, I think you need to go out and come in again," he said.
He obviously detected something in her expression, Bella thought.
"Sorry," she said.
"Pull up a seat. You look like the world and his wife just paid you a visit, bringing all their troubles."
He looked at her shrewdly, eyes narrowed.
"Is it really that bad?"
"Oh, yes."
She folded down a seat and sat next to the bed, head lowered in contrition.
"It's bad. It's worse than bad. I've got Svetlana pinned down in isolation because she started undermining my authority."
He blinked in surprise.
"What happened?"
"She got it into her head that we're being conned, that we don't have enough fuel to make it home after the rendezvous."
"Jesus, you didn't think to tell me about this."
"Didn't want to burden you, Jim."
"But you're burdening me now."
"Things got worse."
"Oh, great. How could they get worse than imprisoning one of your senior crew?"
"Something really bad just happened, and to cap it all, I just did something really, really stupid."
"You're up to speed on the Shenzhou 5?
"Of course." He dimmed the flexi and put it aside. "The Chinese ship, the one that's been inviting us to join them in glorious mutual exploration of genus."
"We just destroyed it."
He took off the half-moon glasses, folded them and placed them delicately on his bedside table.
"Tell me what happened."
She told him about the UEE exclusion zone, the mass drivers and the payloads they had been firing back at the Chinese ship. She told him about her confrontation with Schrope.
"It was supposed to be a warning action," she said. "The idea was to scare them off, not to wipe them off the face of the galaxy."
"Did you see any reaction from her captain after you put the first nuke across his bows?"
"None at all."
"Meaning he was probably under orders not to back down."
Chisholm bit hard on his lip and shook his head.
"This was always going to be a tough call, but I don't think anyone did anything wrong here. The Chinese were yanking our chain. We had to take a stand. That's all we did."
"I only wanted them to turn around."
"We drew the line in the sand. No one made them cross it.
Commander Wang would have been under orders.
Don't feel sorry for the guy, Bella. By tomorrow, he'll be a national hero. They'll have named a square after him within the week and moved his widow into a nice mansion in Shanghai.
We killed him, him and all of his crew.
Beijing killed them.
They didn't even have time to send back for orders.
It was still Beijing, even if those orders were given weeks ago. Look, I'm sorry about what happened, but this is space exploration.
There's something else. I did, said, something inexcusable.
To Svetlana?
No, worse. Shrope.
So you finally lost it with the Shalbatana Terrier.
I came pretty close to accusing him of shooting them down deliberately.
Chisholm mulled over the idea, as if he didn't find it totally preposterous. Could he have done that?
All he'd have to do is switch a few lines of code. It wouldn't have stretched his competence envelope.
I don't think he did it. He's a solid company stiff, but he isn't psychotic.
He sipped some water from the bedside dispenser.
How did Terrier Boy take it, anyway?
Not great.
Chisholm looked amused. Tell me.
By then I'd already accused him of being a reptile.
A reptile? Chisholm said thoughtfully. But what type?
We didn't get into specifics.
Well, that's good. At least you left it open.
Trust you to find something positive to say?
Positivity is something I'm working on. Did Terrier Boy just lap this up?
He asked for a written apology.
Chisholm winced. He's got you there. It's not that you've offended him. The guy's skin is thicker than the European ice crust. He wasn't upset that you called him a reptile. But you sure as hell gave him a pretext for pretending to be.
I know. That's what makes me so mad at myself. I just fell right into it.
You can bet the bastard had a flexi stuffed under his jacket, too, set to voice record. If he doesn't see you eating some serious crow, he'll mail the whole thing home and let the psychs loose on it.
I know, she said again.
They'll raise questions about your command fitness. Say the Janus thing is getting to you, that you started to lash out at your senior staff. The Svetlana thing might not help.
Craig was the one pushing for her removal, Jim.
But you made the decision, right?
Yes, she said resignedly.
That's the way he'd have known it would go down. He's angling for your suspension, Bella. He's itching to park his behind in your command chair.
So why wait for my apology?
Kid's building up ammunition. Even if he lets you ride this one out, he'll have a thick dossier to hand when we get back home. If it doesn't buy him Rockhopper, it'll still get him some kind of promotion.
The devious little shit.
Agreed. I think you ought to write that apology.
I thought that was what you'd say. Matter of fact, I've already written it.
Good for you. Bet it felt like pulling teeth.
If it keeps the ship together, I'll gladly pull my real ones.
Send Craig the grovel note, then send him to me. I'll have a word, see if I can smooth things out. I'll tell him you've been under a lot of pressure, and if he turns against you when we get home, you know he'll have me to deal with as well.
Thanks, she said doubtfully.
I could talk to Svetlana, too. Ryan's got her in isolation.
It's just to keep her away from the rest of the crew. There's really nothing wrong with her. I feel lousy about it, Jim, but I didn't know what else to do.
She's pretty good, isn't she?
None better.
Than these doubts she has. You've looked into them.
I gave her the benefit. Evidence looked pretty compelling, too. But then I consulted with Home. Turns out her numbers didn't stack up.
Her maths was out?
Worse than that. Turns out the numbers she was showing me were faked to bolster her case.
Ooh.
He closed his eyes as if the news caused him actual pain.
That's pretty heavy stuff.
They say she's having some kind of episode. I wouldn't believe it, Jim. This is Svetlana Basegian, not some green behind-the-ears newbie on first rotation. She's been through every crisis scenario imaginable, and I've never even seen her break sweat. But that's the way it was with me, too.
You think if it happened to you, it can happen to her?
You put anything through enough fatigue cycles, sooner or later it fails.
Including people.
We're just small parts in a big machine, Jim. None of us is invulnerable.
He studied her with fierce intensity. I can see this puts you in a bind. Can't have been easy, I guess.
She didn't take it well. She said things.
Bella swallowed.
I nearly hit her. I nearly hit my best friend.
Whatever you did, I'm sure you acted in the only professional way possible.
That's what I keep telling myself.
But it doesn't help.
No. He reached out and took her hand. In that moment of human contact, Bella felt some tiny relief from her distress. She was glad, selfishly, that Jim Chisholm's illness had eased him from duty. It allowed them to talk like this, unstifled by the protocols of command.
"Cut yourself some slack, Bella Lind," he said. "That's an order."
She emailed the letter of apology to Schrope, then made the mistake of trying to sleep. When the alarm pulled her back into consciousness, she felt worse than when she had gone under. Her dreams had been fitful and repetitive, replaying the day's events over and over again, so that she saw the demise of the Shenzhou Five from different angles. Then the dream lurched narrative tracks, conflating the attack on the Chinese ship with the downing of the plane in the high mountains of the Hindu Kush, and she trudged knee-deep in snow, shining a searchlight into wintry darkness, looking for a survivor. The dream kept ending just at the point when she found Wang Xianmin, entombed in snow but still wearing his spacesuit. Somehow she always knew the exact spot to start digging. She would smear the snow from his visor and see that he was still alive behind the glass, his expression relieved and forgiving, simply glad to have been saved. Then she would wake, very briefly, and she would slip back into sleep and the dreams would resume. As she crawled from her hammock, she felt a chemical burden in her body, a debt that had only been partly repaid. If this, she wondered, was the price they were paying to catch up with Janus, what toll would it ask of them when they arrived? Svetlana ripped away the adhesive monitoring patches Axford had pressed to her skin. Immediately the machines launched into a shrill, affronted chorus. She clattered them aside and climbed from the bed. Her clothes were still neatly folded on the bedside table. Jogging pants, t-shirt, a plaid shirt that she wore unbuttoned. She felt lightheaded, but that was to be expected after the length of time she had spent in bed. Opening the air-sealed door between isolation and the rest of the medical center, she heard Jim Chisholm stir behind his partition curtain.
"Svetlana," he asked in a pale croak of a voice, "are you all right?"
"I'm fine, Jim," she said.
"What are you doing? You sound like... is something wrong?"
"It's better that you don't ask," she said. "Much better."
"I know why you're here," Chisholm said. "I know that you're here because you had some falling out with Bella and..."
She pulled the curtains far enough apart to see his face, half swallowed by the pillow, with a damp grey patch next to his mouth. For the first time he looked properly ill to her, as if his condition had finally forced itself to the surface. What had looked like a sure thing 3 weeks ago, that Chisholm would survive the trip to Janus and the return journey to Earth, suddenly felt infinitely less certain.
"There is something wrong," Svetlana said. "Something that I've..."
But now that she was on her feet for the first time in many hours, something stalled her thoughts. Something was different, but at first she attributed it to her lightheadedness.
"The gravity," she said at last.
"You notice too," Chisholm said,
nodding as best he could, a vague adjustment in the angle of his head in its nest of a pillow.
"I thought it was just me."
"We're not running at half a G anymore."
"No, a bit less. 2/5, perhaps. Maybe even less than that."
His eyes were uncomfortably wide as he sought confirmation.
"It's still only day 20, Svetlana said. "We're a full day from the encounter."
"There's got to be a reason for it."
"There must be a problem with the engine. There's no other explanation."
And then a vile thought occurred to her. The engine had been throttled back because the fuel reserves had suddenly begun to run low. One of these minutes, one of these seconds, the engine was going to just snuff out, and suddenly Rockhopper would be free-falling into the night, the terrible realization setting in that there was no way to stop, no way to turn around. But her immediate fears quickly faded. That couldn't be the answer. The engine would keep running at normal efficiency until the last gasp of pressure from the tanks. And even given Svetlana's assumptions about the real fuel load, they were still a long way from running dry. They had enough fuel to complete the Janus operations. It was the return trip that was problematic.
"When did this happen? Is there anything on ShipNet about it?"
"Nothing."
And neither Bella nor Craig has spoken to you about it?
In case you hadn't noticed, Chisholm said, I'm not exactly in the command loop anymore. They don't want to burden me with the pressures of command. They mean to be kind.
He was drugged to the eyeballs, fading in and out of lucidity like a drowning man. More than just kindness, Svetlana thought. She hoped her face gave nothing away.
I need to talk to someone about this, she said. Maybe they don't even realize we have a problem.
Bella won't like you leaving medical.
Svetlana smiled at the dying man.
In the long run, I think she'll thank me for it.
No one was on duty as she left the medical center. Her footsteps fell with dreamy lightness on the catwalk panels. The more she mulled it over, the less likely a technical failure seemed to her. Either the engine worked or it didn't. There was no middle ground in which it would work at slightly reduced efficiency. And since the fuel could not be running out yet, that left only one possibility. Bella must have given the order to throttle back. Bella was beginning to have doubts. Svetlana made her way through the interior of the ship, glad that the lights had been dimmed to a gloomy red for the night shift. The only person she met on her way was Brenda Gammel, from Parry's EVA squad, but Gammel was deep in her own thoughts, giving Svetlana a polite but distracted nod as they passed. Good that it wasn't someone from her own team. Then there would have been too many awkward questions about where she had been and why she was now up and about. As she walked, Svetlana became less certain about how to proceed. If Bella had already begun to come around to her point of view, then it might be best to let events take their course. She reached Parry's quarters and tapped on the plastic door, quietly, until Parry slid it back. He blinked in surprise, then frowned, worried.
Sveta, he said, why are you...
She cut him off. Let me in, Parry. We need to talk. He slid back the door, as wide as it would go, to let Svetlana squeeze into his quarters. Could I get into trouble for this?
You're already in trouble. I don't think a little more will make any difference. Did Bella give you permission to leave the medical center? Never mind that. What's up with the ship? Has Bella given an order to slow down?
Yes, Parry said simply. She allowed herself an instant of triumph. Bella's doubts would build like a landslide from the tiniest of slippages.
Has she said anything about it on Shipnet?
She'll make an announcement at the next shift change if the situation stays the same, Parry said.
She knows the situation, Parry. It isn't going away. They can't unscrew us.
Maybe we're not talking about the same situation. There's been a development. So far only the chiefs know about it. Her elation drained away to nothing.
What kind of development?
It looks as if we may have enough fuel after all.
No, she said forcefully. I know I'm right about this. Just because I can't prove it to Bella's satisfaction. Jesus, Parry, you know I'm right.
I believe you. But it may not matter now.
Of course it damn well matters, she said, and then regretted it,
because the one person she did not need to pick fights with was Parry Boyce. Moderating her tone, she added,
Why? What's changed?
Janus, Parry said.
Oh, great. Tell me.
We've been shining a laser onto it for the last 3 days, a low-energy optical laser, nothing that could be mistaken for a hostile gesture.
I know about that, she said,
remembering that they had gone over the wisdom of this in Saul Regis's discussion group, partly to map the surface details, partly to give us better distance information so we can refine our approach.
What's happened?
Janus is not exactly slowing, but reducing its acceleration. It's as if it's realized we're trying to catch up and is making it as easy as possible. She found the news intriguing and troubling in equal measure.
Why would it run all this way and stop now? You can't tell me it's only just noticed us.
Maybe that's exactly what's happened.
I don't buy it, she said. There's a catch. There's always a catch.
I don't see that there has to be one. Suppose it's committed to leaving the system for one reason or another. It's received an order from Spiker or something like that. It can't stop running from us, but at least it can slow its departure enough to let us get a better look, a chance to say goodbye. Parry paused. It must have been obvious from her expression that she was not convinced by any of that.
Look, if Janus stops accelerating, we can too.
Every gram of fuel we'd have burnt keeping up with it for the 5 days of the survey phase is a gram we'll still have for the journey home.
The bastards couldn't have known this was going to happen, Svetlana said fiercely, and it'll still be marginal.
You may not have the satisfaction of proving you were right, Parry said, at least not until we get home. But don't let that cloud what a good thing this is. Janus hasn't attacked us, or fired a shot across our bows, or made any attempts to outrun us. It wants to meet us. Can't you see that?
I'm seeing something, Svetlana said, just not sure what it is yet.
For a minute they said nothing. Then Svetlana moved into the comfort of Parry's embrace, and they held each other. They kissed, then someone knocked on the plastic partition. Three authoritative raps, like the visit of a policeman. A muffled voice came through the plastic.
Parry, it's Bella. I'm guessing you know why I'm here.
Svetlana slid back the panel.
It's not Parry's fault I'm here. He wasn't sheltering me.
Why do you keep making this so difficult? Bella asked. She was alone, looking tousled, as if she'd been roused from bed.
Because you're killing us.
Bella kept her voice low. Has Parry told you about the change in Janus?
You still need to turn this ship around.
No, Bella said firmly. In a day we'll know whether Janus really is letting us take a closer look. If that's the case, then we'll complete the mission as planned.
And if it begins accelerating again, so that we have to burn fuel simply to keep following it?
Bella hesitated just a moment too long. Svetlana recognized a fissure in the surface of her surety. The crack of doubt she had opened and had prayed would widen. Whatever Janus had done, it was still there.
We'll review things, she said. You almost believe me, don't you? What's stopping you, Bella? Is it Craig Schrope?
Clattering footsteps marked the approach of another figure. Svetlana pushed herself half out of Parry's quarters, with her legs dangling into the corridor. The approaching man leaned forward, his hands whisking along the support rails. He wore a blue zip-up jumpsuit, padded around the joints.
Hello, Craig, Svetlana said icily.
Problem here, Schrope asked. He looked at Svetlana without surprise. Last thing I heard, you were supposed to be in medical. That was the arrangement, right?
She broke it, Bella said sadly.
What exactly is your problem, Svetlana?
Get out of my face, Craig. This is between me and the real commander of this ship, not some jumped-up company sock puppet.
Somewhere along the corridor, another partition rasped open. Someone poked their head out, looked at them, and then returned inside.
Well, we've given reasonable a try, Schrope said.
What would you suggest next? Parry said, throwing her out of an airlock.
Don't be a jerk off all your life, Schrope said.
Only following your example, Terrier boy.
Parry, Bella said menacingly, I don't need this now. Please, just keep out of it.
You'll have to lock me up, Svetlana said. If you don't, I'll try to take this ship from you, just so you'll know where I stand.
Well then, Schrope said, that settles things, doesn't it?
Thanks for the clarification, Svetlana.
I've always admired transparency. It makes decisions like this so much easier.
They locked her down with something close to regret, reminding her of parents banishing a child to her room for some infraction that the child barely comprehended but still had to learn was wrong. This was for her own good, not theirs. She was still allowed access to shipnet, but only to the shallowest, least secure layers. In an absurd twist, she had been assigned two guards from Ryan Axford's medical section, Jagdeep Singh and Judy Sugimoto. Svetlana didn't dare to speculate about what they had been told. All she knew was that when one or the other of them came to escort her to the washroom or the gymnasium, they did so with an exaggerated solicitousness that she had never known as a real patient. During these little expeditions, there was never anyone else about, and she had the whole washroom to herself. It was the same in the gymnasium. Some pretext had been used to remove everyone else. She could have refused to exercise, but part of her wanted to be strong, and so she submitted to the regime they suggested. She jogged and used weights, and then showered away some of her pent-up frustration. Parry was allowed to visit her, though only under the supervision of one of the nurses. He came once every 6 or 8 hours, between his own duties with the EVA team.
"This is ridiculous," she said. "Bella's blocked everything. I barely know what day it is."
"She isn't keeping you in the dark as much as you think," Parry said. "I'm not defending her. I think this is wrong. But I do think she genuinely hated having to do this to you."
"She had a choice."
"She didn't. Not really. I know this is cutting Bella up really badly. She's not enjoying one second of it. She thinks she's destroyed a friendship, a really good one. She's the one ignoring the evidence."
"No,"
Parry said, gently but firmly. "She didn't ignore it at all. She looked at it, weighed it, took it seriously, but it just didn't convince her." He sighed, kneading his red cap between his fingers in a strangely beseeching gesture, as if he had come to her in penitence.
"Look, it isn't all as bad as you think anyway. Looks pretty bad from where I'm sitting. Bella hasn't shut you out of everything, at least no more than she has the rest of us. That's what I meant when I said she wasn't keeping you in the dark as much as you think."
"I can't see anything," she said, "not even the news from home. Is that what you mean by not keeping me in the dark?"
"That," Parry said, "is nothing to do with Bella at all. It's the uplink antenna. They're having problems picking up the signal."
"What kind of problems?"
"They don't know what's going on. It's just that there's nothing coming in on the uplink, like the rest of the system's gone off the air."
"But they must have a team looking into it," Svetlana said. "Haven't they figured it out yet?"
"Doesn't look like it."
"If Bella would only let me back into Shipnet," she said, "then I might be able to look into it."
"You do that."
"I never asked to be removed from duty," she said. "I just said I'd do everything in my power to turn us around."
"And now?"
"That's still true, but if Bella wants my input, she can have it."
"I don't know," Parry said. "I'll mention it to her, but I think she'll probably wait and see what your team has to say first."
"It can't be anything complicated. How long have they been working on it?"
"About 12 hours, Parry said.